This is the Non Sequitur Show, where bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. Season 1, Episode 7. Renegade, Philosophy's Man in Black. A special interview with activist Aaron Ra. Join in on the discussion and check out upcoming episodes at www.nonsecshow.com. That's NONSEQ show.com. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Hello, beautiful people. My name is Kyle Curtis. I am joined by my co-host, Steve McRae, and this is Non Sequitur. Today, we have a very special interview with, personally, one of my favorite YouTubers. He is widely known in the atheist and theist debate, and I think that if you're in that world, he will be absolutely no stranger to you. And of course, I'm talking about the one, the only, Aaron Ra. Aaron has been a political activist for more than a decade. He is an international public speaker, advocating science, education, skeptical thinking, humanist values, and secular policies all over the country and in 20 other countries. As a former regional director of the American Atheists and now president of the Atheist Alliance of America, he has over 144,000 subscribers to his channel, which has garnished him millions of views. He is also the host of a podcast, Ramen, which you cannot get a better name than that, I don't think. But he is the host of the Ramen podcast, which spotlights progressive people and vendors, performers, politicians, pioneers.
My pleasure.
Everything going good in your world?
Yeah, yeah. I've got a couple of series that I'm doing that I'm happy with. I'm happy with everything that I'm writing. And the next series or the next episode that I'm going to do, the one after this, I've already got that written, and I'm excited about everything that I'm producing, and I'm delighted right now. And I kind of just sit at my key. I mean, it's really actually a terribly boring life. I just sit at my keyboard. And I write and I edit videos and record, but I enjoy that the way other people enjoy painting. I paint too, but I used to. Nobody has time anymore, but I spend all my time composing these presentations, and I enjoy it. It's my art form, so I'm happy that I get to do this for a living now.
So let's start there then. What kind of brought you to your place of activism now? Did you grow up in any type of religion? Were you religious at any point? And then what was the turning point, the spot in your life that kind of gave you cracks in the dam, so to speak?
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting story in that it's not the same as everybody else's. I mean, I was a Christian in the sense that I believed that Jesus was our savior for whatever the hell that meant and everything, because my parents said so. I was raised in a Mormon family, although I never adopted Mormon belief myself. Mm-hmm. I was baptized into their church at 8 years old because they considered that to be the age of reason, but it's certainly not the age of consent. And forever after that, when people would ask me what my religion was, I would say, well, my family is Mormon. And then they wouldn't even realize that there's a comma there, which is almost certainly going to be followed by a but.
Right.
But right then, they would jump in and start telling me all the crazy things that Mormons believe. And this was advantageous for me growing up because I got to see from other Christians how different Christian denominations deal out hatred against each other.
Good point.
And I know a lot of Christians will say that Mormons aren't really Christian. And that's another topic that, to go into probably the next time I'm on stage, with the ridiculousness of excluding all of these other groups because they don't believe exactly like you do. There's as many different kinds of Christianity as there are individual Christians. Everybody just really Christianity is just about making up your own bullshit and pretending to believe that. Well, so if people want to say that Mormons aren't really Christian, and I can understand why they would, but I mean, it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Sorry, they are They are Christian. Yeah. You know, there's no way of getting around that. But it's gotten to the point where Mormons are now embarrassed by Protestants to the point that Mormons are starting to distinguish themselves or distance themselves.
That's
crazy. I've actually seen Mormons now start talking about Mormonism versus Christians, which I never heard as a child. The only Christianity I knew was Mormon. And wow. And now I'm seeing them distinct. Well, we're not like those people.
Yeah, I was in the same boat as you. I was baptized Mormon when I was 17. It was kind of one of those things where, yeah, I totally believe that they are a Christian church, sure. But they're no more not Christian than Catholic or Protestant or Jehovah's Witness or whatever denomination. Like you said, there's 44,000 something denominations. What makes one more Christian than the other? I have no idea. Let them figure it out.
A Baptist will talk to a Pentecost, and they will agree, at least on this one thing, that Mormons are not Christian. But go tell a Mormon that they're not Christian. It's the same as going and telling a Catholic that they're not Christian.
But when for demographics, they include them, though.
I love when the Protestants try to say that the Catholics are not true Christians, because that makes a substantial argument. Over half, more than half of the entire Christian collective is Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
So if Catholics are not true Christians, then when you look at the pie charts of all the world religions, that means that the true Christians, meaning the Protestant Christians, are no longer the dominant religion. Christianity is not the number one religion in the world. Islam is.
Interesting.
Now, Islam's going to be soon anyway, but by excluding Catholics, they just give Muslims the dominant position, so that Islam is the dominant religion in the world, and Christianity, if we're going to consider it only to be Protestant Christianity, they become the fourth largest religion, not the second.
Wow. It drops down that much?
They come after Catholics, and get this, Catholics come after Hindus.
Wow. Why do you think... you just said that that Islam will be, quickly become the most popular religion.
Well, that goes back to the question you just asked me about how I became an activist. Honestly, that's it. It was the realization some 20 years ago that Islam is the fastest growing religion and that Christianity is in a general state of worldwide decline. So I'm able to extrapolate to see that the inroads that we make in our legal system today that accommodate faith will only pave the way for the Islamification of the United States in a future generation upcoming. Because everything that we make that caters to Christianity now will only cater to Islam when it becomes the next dominant religion. And the only way to contest that, you can't fight religion with religion. That just doesn't work. But
right.
You can fight it with reason. It's the only tool that we have. It's the only one that can work. And so secular politics, and this is where I get really frustrated at Christians who do not understand that atheists are their greatest ally. You know, because you've seen how religious people will group together, and they'll even bond with the Jews, and they'll bond with the Muslims even against their common hated enemy, the atheists. And the reason for that is because atheists aren't buying into the game of pretend like everybody else is, because that's what all religion is. It's pretending. Okay,
right.
And so they exclude us because we're the only ones that are not pretenders. But the advantage that Christians in the United States have in atheists as an ally is that we are advocating for secular laws. And so when Islam does eventually dominate, not just worldwide, but in the United States specifically, because the United States is one of the last remaining Christian strongholds,
mm-hmm.
when the Muslim religion is the dominant religion even here, those Christians are going to be wishing that they had a separation of church and state. They are going to
happen here
because you see them admit this sometimes when they want to do things for faith-based schools and so forth. And it's that's a great idea. We'll go ahead and extend that to the Muslim schools as well. And then suddenly you hear the screeching noise of the brakes locking up in the freeway with you. No. We need secular education. Well, only when you have to accommodate the other religions do you realize what the hell secularism actually means.
It is so funny you mention that, because one of your famous theists that you love so much, G-Man, just recently called me up and he said, "Hey, Steve, have you heard that there's no more separation of church and state? Trump has done away with separation of church and state." I said, "Really? News to me. When did this happen?" Not that he could anyways, obviously. it's been in the news. It's been in the news. I'm like, there's nothing in the news about this. And I kept saying, explaining to him that didn't happen. It was something that Trump said in the, like 2016 to what I believe Johnson was the Johnson Amendment. Right, correct, to the Johnson Amendment, which didn't even go through anyways on the Republican bill. But he couldn't understand that if there was no separation of church and state, and I told him the exact same thing, your flavor of religion, your denomination of Christianity is not going to be the one that takes over. It's going to be probably Islam.
That's why, yeah. I can't, I like, it,
if that was the case.
It's hard for me to understand that Islam could get a stronghold and become a majority here in this nation. You know, with all the war on terror and the way that it's portrayed in the media, like, what would it, why would that be, Aaron? Why would it, Islam eventually take strong?
Well, because Islam doesn't have all of, to forgive me for saying this, but it, the advantage that Islam has is that it doesn't have all the unbelievable bullshit that Christianity has. Okay, they've taken away a lot of the, there's so little of Christianity makes sense. I mean, I'm being unnecessarily polite by saying that there's any part of it that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. But if you want to convert a Christian, you're going to have to get them to believe a whole bunch of bullshit that just doesn't pan out. Why would, I'm not even going to get into all the questions. But with Islam, it's very, very simple. Right, you have a God that's going to judge you over whether you believe. You don't have the original sin, so you don't have to believe in creationism. And if you don't believe in creationism, then you've got to find some other justification for why the hell did Jesus have to die if there wasn't original sin, and why did God have to come down in human form to be himself, to kill himself, to appease himself? None of that makes any damn sense, right? But with Islam, you don't get that. With Islam, you get more the classic version that a lot of Christians already believe, which is, and this is a mistake that they believe this, but they think that God is going to judge them over whether they're good and bad. Nowhere does the Bible imply that. Sorry. The Bible judges you over whether you believe. That's it. Whether right. You believe impossible nonsense for no good reason, because if you're an evil person, all sins can be forgiven if you but believe, and if you don't believe, then it doesn't matter how great or wonderful or charitable you are, because the only sin that cannot be forgiven is the sin of disbelief, expressed as blaspheme against the Holy Ghost. So there's no way, no provision under which a non-believer could ever get into heaven, either in the Christian scheme nor the Muslim scheme either. But the advantage that the Muslims have is that they don't have all of this other stuff that they have to make apologies for. They've just got the simple five. You believe in the God, and you're good. Or if you don't believe in the God, then you're screwed. And we don't have to have all of the other stories and all the other fables. They've disassociated themselves from all of it. Now, you have a lot of Muslims who are flat earthers. You have a lot of Muslims who are young earth creationists and so forth. But they don't have to be. There's nothing in their theology that requires that they reject science on any of these grounds. So you can have a perfectly reasonable Muslim who holds his position accepting all the sciences, he can accept evolution and everything. He just holds on to the one thing that is required. You have to submit to God. Mm-hmm. You have that belief in God, and that's it.
So it's much more inclusive.
How easy is it to sell that?
Yeah, it's much more inclusive.
Yeah, now, yeah. When you talk about like young earth creationism and everything and flat earth, you've got to sell whole volumes full of nonsense.
That's a very good point that I've never thought about. It kind of is telling, I think, to I guess people's mindset sometimes. You mentioned there. This is where I was going to go next anyway, but it's kind of good that you picked up on it. You said the word fable, and one of the videos that that actually made me start following you, and that I think was just brilliant, was your breakdown of Noah's Ark and the reasons that could not be possible. Can you kind of condense, you know, in those four videos into a?
It wasn't those weren't four videos. I think those were eight.
Yeah, that was a whole series. Yeah, that, really? I think it was I know it was over half a dozen. Yeah,
I've only seen four of them. I'll say good, then I have something to watch later.
Yeah, there was, and I had professional scientists assisting me on every one of them.
They were great. They were brilliant.
Well, thank you very much. I had to do this because when you're trying to talk to believers, it's a strange thing. They don't care what the facts are. They believe in authority. So what is my authority? I, in order to say something is true and have them accept it as true, I have to say, well, this is actually coming from, you know, Professor Blankety Blank, PhD.
Right.
Because otherwise they're not going to hear it. It's the same fact, no matter who says it.
Right.
But I have to say, no, this is endorsed and backed by this organization or by this particular specialist. So just to make sure, and you can't ever say, if you're going to be promoting science, we are under so many strict rules that religion is not. I mean, I've seen religious apologists. I mean, last week I saw one. The guy made like 7 or 8 videos about me in a span of 2-3 days. And in every single one of them, he lied about me multiple times. He said things he knew was not true and that he couldn't verify that. I can prove we're all false. But that's okay for religion. I can't make a single mistake. Well, I can make a mistake. Only if I clarify it later on, but I can't ever lie the way they lie constantly. I can't lie once. If it's one time they show that I said something, and if they can prove that it's false and that I knew it was false when I said it, I'm done, career over, because this is all about how we evaluate honestly. Now religion can lie every day, all day. As a matter of fact, that's all religion is. Making up things pretending to know things you don't know, which is dishonest. Asserting facts that are not facts, which are dishonest. Misrepresenting facts, which of course deliberately lies. Nothing but lies. But if the scientist, if a science communicator says one thing that they can show that is both wrong and I knew it was wrong and I'm trying to deceive people, I'm done.
Yeah, you're held to a much higher standard to them, which I don't, no offense, you should be. You should be held to a higher standard. But like you said, they're so fluent at lying. It's so prevalent with them. Nobody cares anymore. Oh, such and such lied. Okay, whatever. Welcome to another Monday.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Like, you see it. We see it in our culture all the time. I mean, from the administration down, throughout media. I mean, like you watch certain, say, news stations, and you'll see people saying things, and then they'll say, well, no, this isn't true at all, and then a second later they're handed the memo that no, this is true, and well, it's true, but so what, the bullshit excuse. Well, there's never an admission that you were wrong, right? That hey, I shouldn't have said this one.
Oh no.
No, that doesn't happen. And then, we have people in high levels of government. I'm not just talking about the highest level. I'm talking about throughout our government, because I'm in Texas. Every level of our government here, from state and federal, we've got people who lie regularly, where you can show that, hey, what you just said here, you said here earlier that you already knew about this fact that proves you wrong here. So what the hell? Why are you? And you're just saying things. You don't have any source for this. You're just stating it as a fact. You don't say that I believe something. You just said it was like it was true. Like you proved that it was true. And then when you're called on it, you say, that's what somebody told me. That's what I read. So that doesn't mean that doesn't change the fact that you expressed it as if it were true, which means that you had to verify it first.
Right.
But we don't live in a world anymore where anyone has to be accountable for the things that they say.
I don't think they do.
This is very disturbing for me. This is where we live in a world where people get to make up their own reality. And so people who know the Earth is a sphere will pretend that it's flat because it's fun to pretend that it's flat and make a bunch of videos where they get to pretend that it's flat.
Yeah, I don't think they do validate it sometimes, though, because I've ran into an instance where, like when I was talking to Kent Hovind, and I'm like explaining to him, hey, this claim that you have in this particular handbook is clearly wrong. And his excuse was he got it from somewhere else, as if somehow that removes the due diligence he had to do to go check on it, and it gives him some sort of plausible deniability, he thinks. And I'm like, how does that work?
Is that, I saw a video, Aaron, where you went to the Texas... I believe it was the House video where they were voting on the, I guess, broadening teachers' ability to.
That's one way to spin it.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah,
make up bullshit and teach that you teach lies as true. Yes,
that's my favorite thing. But there were like 3 people who got up there that were in favor of the bill. That just when the guy was asking a question, you could tell that they were deliberately running circles around the questions that were being answered.
It was cringe.
To not be able to admit
total
what
cringe.
They knew was correct.
Exactly.
And there's a big... I encourage everybody to go and watch this video, because there's a point where when you come up, it's like a completely different climate in the room, because you don't hold back in that video. You let it fly. And I think that it was refreshing for everybody. You just kind of see people's face like...
Well, I think a lot of people were thinking that, and he spoke it. Right.
I want to address that too, because a lot of people will give me hell for being a firebrand, so to speak.
I love
for being, you know, too blunt or what have you. But think about that day. If you watch that video, and I think it, I titled it Aaron Ra in the House in the or house. Something like that, mm-hmm. Aaron in the House.
We'll link
and
it.
So I'm giving a testimony, but it's not just my testimony in the video. You hear other people speaking too. Now, there were a couple of people who were speaking on behalf of mainstream science, but they were speaking in defense of mainstream science, but they were not scientists.
Right.
For whatever reason, we didn't have any actual scientists that were able to assemble to show up there. So we had a couple of laymen who were not trained or especially skilled in talking about this subject, and they didn't know their enemy very well. And that's another problem, because if you're not immersed in this, you don't really know what you're up against.
Right.
Right.
And too often you'll think, well, these people just don't know what the facts are. No, it's not that they don't know. It's that they know, and they know they're lying.
Right.
And they have an agenda behind lying.
Absolutely.
So I was the only guy that went up against three professional speakers from Liberty University and from some other creationist organization, and then, of course, you know, from within our own government. I think there was another House representative or something up there.
And a lawyer.
Testified. And so how does the one person who is familiar with this argument, you know, deal not only with that? I don't mean to speak ill of people that want to defend science, but I mean, these people didn't. Honestly, they didn't know what they were talking about, and they weren't the people who speak on this.
Right.
Okay. I appreciate that they did, but what we really needed to have, and we didn't have on that particular day, was actual professional representatives of scientific organizations. So what you had was a couple of amateurs who didn't know what they were talking about, and me. And I'm not a professional scientist either, but I've spent the last 20 years of my life immersed in this argument. I know exactly what's going on, and so. All of the weight comes down on my shoulders to take on, you know, the Discovery Institute and Liberty University and all of this.
So well, I
get 2 minutes to speak. My 2 minutes had better have potency, because it's the only 2 minutes our side has.
Right. Why do you think more scientists wouldn't come to?
No, I'm not saying they wouldn't. Very often, you don't get a whole lot of forewarning for these things.
Okay,
and gotcha. Too often, a professional scientist has a much different perspective than I do. Here's where I distinguish myself from them. Professional scientists deal with other scientists.
Right.
They don't deal with lawyers or politicians, and that's what creationists are.
Exactly. Exactly.
So they don't realize. I mean, the scientists will know what the facts are, and they'll think that anybody else that knows what the facts are will be. And I was naive enough to believe this once upon a time myself. That if I were to go to the Board of Education and I hear these people saying these false things, well, I would just show them what the truth is. And I'm telling you, it was like as recently as 2005, I still believe this, that if I were just to show them what the truth is, they would say, oh, my bad, my mistake, I'll change the policy then. Because you would be compelled. You would not deliberately lie to students in a classroom.
You wouldn't
lie to other people's kids if you knew that it was a lie. But I encountered people on a board of education who would deliberately, I understood and admitted it. I had an opponent in a debate, I think it was in 2005, who admitted to me in writing before moderators, because this was a written debate that was recorded online, and I recently got copies of this. There was somebody managed to extrapolate, somebody managed to get almost the entire debate that was lost for years and just sent to me an email like a week ago.
Oh, great.
And I'm delighted about this, so I'm going to make that public. But I had this debate with this guy wherein he admitted that he knew there were transitional species in the fossil record, but he wanted to teach students there were none, because he said it was important that they believe there are none.
What?
So it's important to believe a lie that you know is a lie. So you admit that you're going to lie to other people's kids.
I can't even wrap my head around that.
How is that a thing?
That's what religion is. It's manipulation of the masses. It's getting people to believe. It is make believe. It's not about truth. I often said in my videos that creationism is not and does not like the truth.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. I just like to me it I can't wrap my mind around the fact that somebody would, and somebody who is teaching. Like their number one priority should be the well-being and the education of those that they're instructing.
And what is education? I mean, education is where you're preparing somebody to understand the world that they're about to take over.
Exactly.
And that they better understand it if they're going to take the helm from the previous generation.
Exactly.
But at some point, we decided that they don't need to understand it. They just need to believe whatever we want to pretend to believe, whatever we would rather believe, regardless whether it's true or not. I had a conversation. I've had this conversation many, many times over, but I had it again. I swear it was yesterday, where someone admitted to me that it doesn't matter if the things that they believe are actually true. They believe them because they want to.
How do you justify that?
What the religious position is. Why can't, if it's, so what if it's fairy tales? Can't I believe in fairy tales? Because that makes me happy.
No,
stupid.
You can't.
Did you hear in the news about the Illinois? I think it was Illinois that had, they were teaching creationism in school and like openly. And they, this was a public school. It wasn't like a private school or something like that. But it was, they were telling kids that basically, 7,000 years ago, man was walking with dinosaurs. And of course, the educated parents got a hold of this and all hell broke loose, as well as it should. And I think that every one of those people involved, every teacher, every superintendent, everyone that was ever involved in that should be gone, voted out, done, whatever. There should be a policy to get people that are incompetent for their positions the hell out.
Yes, you would not hire a history teacher that
doesn't know history.
I'm really hoping that what you just said is a prophecy that will be fulfilled in 2018 and 2020. I'm really crossing my fingers on that.
Please. I mean, Steve just brought up a really good segue back to kind of where we started, which was the Ark. And on Ken Ham's Ark, which is the... you know, the big mega structure supposed to be to the T what the Ark was. How?
The $100 million monstrosity, exactly what you don't know I had. Sure, okay. Let's go with that.
Can we start with the keel? let's just talk about the keel for a moment. His boat has a keel. It's a boat, right? It has a bow and it has a keel. And even a rudder, although the rudder doesn't move. There's a big, huge fixed thing. But so we're talking about a vehicle that is literally a box. It's described as a box in the Bible. I mean, it's an ark. That's literally a box.
Right.
And it's going to sit on the ground and hold all these animals in it, and then when the water comes, it'll float up. So it's going to start from a flat ground position, so it doesn't need a keel there, right? And it's going to float around, and when all the water's gone, it's going to land back down on a flat ground position.
Well, how many feet is the keel? I mean, how big is the keel?
Well, just think about why the keel would exist, because the Bible doesn't mention it, right?
Right.
Because, of course, the Bible wouldn't mention a keel. Why would it have a keel? It doesn't have a means of propulsion, and it doesn't have a means of steering. What the hell's a keel for?
did they mention metal brackets in the Bible too?
Oh yeah, all those
air conditioning
reinforcement beams. What I really love is that initially, they had this beautifully inspirational idea that they were going to house a zoo inside the ark. Now
they never got permits for that. Sure. Those animals would have been dead by the end of the day.
The first idea of that had to be so inspirational to all these believers, all these, you know, misty-eyed. Oh, that'd be so wonderful. The children would come in and say that all these animals, they would have hundreds and hundreds of animals on the ark, and it would be wonderful. And then they realized immediately the critical flaw with that.
Yep.
There's not enough ventilation.
It would smell so bad, it would be impossible
to
even take care of them.
The Bible says there was one window.
Yeah, was it at the top supposedly a small little
You had eight people, and you have to imagine them with snow shovels climbing up these climbing up the ladder to this one window.
It
would be methane poisoning in the first day.
Death by cow farts.
He has dinosaurs in the ark. Like,
yeah, but he doesn't have any tritylodonts. Why? Because he never heard of them. Because they were a form of proto-mammal cynodont that died out in the Triassic period, and they were virtually mammals, and Noah would have seen none of them, would have had no knowledge of them. So Ken Ham has admitted in previous interviews that he knows what the evidence is, and he doesn't care.
Oh, I think he's outright just a dishonest person. I don't think he cares one way or another. Yeah, I don't think he does care at all.
My wife brought this to my attention. She said this was the moment when she realized that Ken Ham was a professional liar.
Mm-hmm.
When he said that he has seen the fossil evidence dated to more than 66 million years ago, that that dinosaurs had brain cancer, for example. You know, how the distortions in the bones, you know, this is indicative of cancer. This animal died of cancer. Well, Ken Ham says, how could it have died of cancer when the Bible says that on the sixth day God created everything and it was good? So what he says, and he said this a number of times, he's actually said this several times in presentations, that you put on your Bible glasses, which is another word for confirmation bias, and then you, and that's literally what it is, and then you throw out every fact that we can show to prove that that's wrong and simply ignore it and say, well, oh, fossils couldn't have formed before sin. There was no death before sin. You know, the Bible describes a flood that connects with geology. You know, and then the Bible says that man created all forms of animals that connects with. You know, he's making it up. He's making up excuses to follow a fable, a fairy tale, something he knows cannot be proven to be true and can be proven not to be true. And he's just ignoring all of the facts that because it's pretend, it's make believe.
So what made him have?
He's literally lying to his flock regularly.
So what made him have a Pachycetus in there? What brought that on? He has didn't he have like a stuffed Pachycetus in one of the cages or something?
And the sad thing is it's a beautiful rendering.
Yeah, I heard it's really good. They really went all out department, but
better I would have to say than any scientific rendering of that has done because. What scientific renderings do not do for Pachycetus is they don't give it a broad-bladed tail like a badger, or excuse me, not a badger, but a beaver would have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that they would have to have this. And the reason that we know that we would have to have this is because the way that whales evolved, they did not develop a greater dependence on their hind legs. So if they were using their hind legs at all, then they wouldn't have diminished into nothing. So we know that right from the onset of whale swimming, they were dependent on that tail. They had to be. Right. And so that tail, even in Pachycetus, would have had to have been broad-bladed like a beaver's tail. Although there's no way to see fossil evidence of this, we can extrapolate from the other information to know that that's what it had to be.
So which experts did he get that from? He didn't obviously know these details. So he had to have go to some expert that actually was very aware of these details, which probably were an evolutionary biologist of some time, or at least expert in phylogeny of some kind.
Well, he has a number of professional scientists who have hung up their respectable credentials to believe in lie. For example, Andrew Snelling. Andrew Snelling personally dated a rock formation in Australia in the billions of years old and gave the scientific data indicating those ages, mm-hmm. including the radiometric tests that he did to prove that. But then, he was writing for the creationist organizations, which later became Answers in Genesis, and he wrote contradictions to his own studies to blame all geology on a worldwide flood. So he knows firsthand and can prove that he is wrong.
For what gain, though? Like, why would you do
because
that?
How does these people want to believe? They want to believe that they're not really going to die.
But I think all of them have hung up their academic credentials.
They want to believe that all the injustice can be rectified because they have a magic imaginary friend who can wish, who can grant genie wishes if you have to.
It wasn't just him, Arne. There's other creationists with PhDs that had written very good PhD theses, from what I understand. I've looked at some of them. Yep. I mean, like one had a nuclear on strontium and iridium. He shat all over it later on as a creationist. Another person. Even Jason Lyle. He's a legit PhD. Dr. Tompkins. He shat all over his work because we've tried to get him to
like,
back
how,
up his
how
things.
Could that be that they?
Because they don't care. First of all, they don't really publish that much to begin with, and therefore they don't really have any standing in the academic community. So
there was a scientist, a professional scientist, who was at one point a young Earth creationist, and he wrote a beautiful expose of this. And he was one of the moderators in that debate I was telling you about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
However, this guy has since kind of lost his mind. He was a petrogeologist, and he started out as a young Earth creationist. He was an author for one of the creationist organizations, and He wrote, I think his name was
Morton?
Glenn Morton.
Yeah, Glenn Morton. Dr. Morton.
He wrote,
Morton's
he wrote
Demon.
An article about Morton's Demon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he had a wealth of information on his website that was critical of young Earth creationism. And since atheists are atheists because we care about the facts, and you know the truth is what the facts are. So if you're an honest person, you're going to care what the facts are because that's what the truth is. So that's where we are. So here we had an ally who believes in Jesus. He never got quite so far as to become atheist. He rejected young Earth creationism, and so he got angry that atheists were his strongest allies and were looking to him as an ally. And so at one point, he had a meltdown a few years ago, and he deleted all of his...
Oh, really? I was not aware of that, because I actually read his older stuff, and it was pretty good.
He deleted everything.
Interesting.
Why? Yeah, other people have fortunately saved all the important stuff, like Morton's Demon. You can still find the story out there. But he doesn't host it anymore, because he considers atheists to be a worse enemy than young Earth creationists.
That's
as a matter of fact, that's
strange.
What happened. That's what went wrong with my debate, was that Glenn Morton had decided that the truth didn't matter as much as what you believe. And that's the religious position. So he started sending private messages to my opponent to try to help my opponent win, because he couldn't tolerate the idea. And he expressed this, that he couldn't tolerate the idea of an atheist winning a debate.
So backwards, I guess this is a good time to one question that I want to know that I think you probably deal with on a, it's got to be a daily basis. You have to have people that are trying to troll you, trying to convert you, and constantly calling you out. How do you deal with, you know, that kind of wave of confrontation that is coming at you?
Well, I've learned that I will offer any amount of patience necessary if I can still believe that you're sincere.
Mm-hmm.
It comes when you have to prove that you are not sincere for me to give up on you, and then we're just done. So, for example, I mean, in the last week, somebody made a series of videos that just lied about me on every episode, and he kept cranking them out, and so I wrote a blog post about him. I'm like, because I said, okay, we should have just a real life conversation, because you're not getting messages, and you're for whatever reason we're not connecting. You then make a video that says, well, Aaron seems to believe blah blah blah, and say things that I don't seem to believe at all, and I don't know where you're getting any of this from, but it's all wrong. So mm-hmm. We should have a real life, like a Google Hangout, where we're both talking and it's uninterrupted, and I can know right away whether you understand what I'm saying to you or not, and then I can reason with you.
Sure.
But he wouldn't have that. He needed to keep the conversation one-sided, and he needed to constantly misrepresent me. So we were never going to have that conversation. So as I said, I wrote a blog post about that. I often get people that want to challenge me to a debate. And the beautiful thing about that is that they don't mean a debate. They know already that no audience is going to pay to have that jackass go on stage to debate me. They're not going to pay for the venue. They're not going to pay for hotel rooms for either of us to fly to either other's town. You know, none of that's going to happen. What they want to do instead is get on a Google Hangout so that they can yell at me or yell over me, and then cut the video up for their own audience, who they hope is not going to see the whole thing.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny you mentioned that, because, you know, you've been on my channel many times, and it's all unedited. Nothing's changed, whatever. But I actually have, you know, flat earth discussions as well. And I have ran into that exact same thing, somebody taking bits and parts of it, changing things around for their own agenda. And I find it to be disingenuous, because you know what? If I go to that video and they don't have the link to the original video where somebody could actually go see what has been edited and changed, that person is no longer welcomed. And it's not because I care so much about them sending traffic my way, but I at that point, I know they don't give two shits about what the truth is, because they don't want people seeing the original unedited video, because I don't edit anything on my channel.
Yeah. First time I met Eric Hovind. second time I met Eric Hovind. He wanted to shake my hand, and I refused. And my wife was with me at that time, and she thought I was being unnecessarily rude.
Mm-hmm.
And so she met him pleasantly, you know, as Southerners.
Yeah, she's a pleasant woman.
It's a Southern thing.
It's a Southern thing.
Yeah. So she shook his hand, and it was very polite. And she told him that she would have an interview with him as long as He didn't cut it up, or that he would keep the original online so that everybody could see. She requested that he keep it online in its original content so that everybody could see what was really said in what order.
Wonder how it turned out.
Well, what ended up happening, as you probably guessed, is that he did keep an unpromoted original version skewed somewhere, but he also had an edited version where he switched answers with questions.
Stop it.
Frankenstein cuts. Awesome. That's a Ray Comfort move.
And so my wife came to me after this, and she says, "I am so embarrassed that I shook that asshole's hand."
Live and learn, right? Live and learn. Yeah, that's a Ben Stein Ray Comfort move.
You've been the topic of one individual's videos here lately. G-Man has stated that you don't have any kind of authority and you don't know really what you're talking about.
You remember what I said about authority?
Yes.
Somehow or other, the credentials matter more than the facts.
They seem to think
so.
How
does that work?
Yeah, they seem to think so. I don't know why. But then when you get somebody that does have letters in front of their name telling them they're wrong, they don't care. It doesn't matter to them anyways. You can't win. Yeah.
Well, I've found that creationists, and they can use people like Andrew Snelling to this end, and the other scientists you just listed, if you've got one creationist geologist, you can use that to trump the entire U.S. Geological Survey.
Oh, yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah, it only takes one of them against, 100,000 scientists. That's the ratio. Well, this one person said this. It must be true. Never mind the other hundreds of thousands that saying that they're wrong. Screw them. Okay.
Yeah, we have
whatever.
A professional liar who we can prove is lying.
How do you keep up with, there's people out there, there's atheist activists, there's Christians, but they all kind of seem to mold themselves under, one niche. They try to stay with one particular issue. You, on the other hand, you cover a wide range. You cover the philosophy aspect, the art, geology, archaeology. How do you balance those things, and what is your favorite issue to debate?
Well, my favorite issue to debate is cladistics, really. I mean, you have the creationist argument of kinds, that you have these created kinds. And I have a video on my channel called The Phylogeny Challenge, wherein I show that creationists cannot say what their kinds are, but that actual scientists can prove that there is no such thing. And I'm currently doing my life's work. I'm doing a project. I'm actually working a project that was the reason I went to school in the first place, so that I could do this project. It's the Phylogeny Explorer project. It's a unification of all of the peer-reviewed cladograms in the world into one single navigable encyclopedic database.
So kind of like a tree of life, but instead of being phylogenetics, but cladistically.
Yes, there have been a couple of valiant attempts made before, but that didn't include all fossil forms, like the Arizona Tree of Life project, which I dearly loved, but I did notice that there was huge areas that were missing out of that. And the issue that had, and a couple of other cladograms had, was a lack of funding, because they were hiring PhDs to essentially build a website. So
wrong people for the job.
They would run out of funding, and they would politic against each other and things. So a number of these different sites, and there would have been a half a dozen of them, collapsed kind of that way. And so the Phylogeny Explorer project has now teamed with Paleos.com, which was a team of amateurs that did a fantastic encyclopedic website explaining paleofauna in vast detail that was not available to the regular public other than through paywalls. So there's images that you can't see unless you're an actual professional scientist, unless you go to Paleos. Because Paleos was able to go through the paywall and take some of these images, so that and science does themselves no favors by holding on to this information. No, this needs to be where everybody can see it. So this is what Paleos did, and I and a number of professional scientists really admired the work that these guys did, and so we're now working together on this. So we're taking some of that encyclopedic information, and they were more concentrating on the ages of geologic time, where my project is working on the value or the explanation of the clades, which I'll be happy to go into at another time in another place. Right now, not now is not the moment. But I wanted to address something that you mentioned before about G-Man calling me out.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have the scientific method, which is you make any statement, any one statement. Let's take that one statement and verify whether that one statement is true or not. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful about the things that I say to make sure that the things that I say are actually defensively accurate, right? So G-Man and a couple of others have made videos about me where they criticize my – when I talk about supernatural things like curses and hexes and transformations and golem spells and all like this, and I put them in the category of magic – that's because they're all supernatural. That's what makes the magic.
That is the definition of magic. Yeah.
Right? So then all of these people will want to go with the straw man mischaracterization of saying that supernatural is just stage magician's illusions. But I specified in that video that I was talking about genie magic.
Right.
And so G-Man did his best backflip in the one video that I saw that he made about me. Because somebody shared it because they thought it was funny, and I thought it was funny too. He makes this thing about, you know, how genies are if you only look at Aladdin, then genies are limited to Aladdin, I guess, and so that means it's somehow completely different from his god, which is, you know, it's exactly the same. Even if you limit it only to Aladdin, it's still exactly the same. But then if you go to the broader category of books that also include genies, you realize that, damn, this compendium really is talking about his damn god. And this is how Elijah was taken up in a whirlwind, because the whirlwind was God, because a whirlwind is literally a dust devil. It's not just a colloquialism. That's literally what they believed that it was.
Wow.
That's where genies and devils come from, is the idea of a dust devil.
Yeah.
Okay, so... G-Man wanted to misrepresent all of this as much as he could. He was saying that it's not really magic because it's not an illusion, but I said it was genie magic. So when he's talking about genies, well, now think about it. If the genie is, you know, granting these wishes, is it an illusion? Is it because he has, you know, did he has a dove hidden under his sleeve or something like that? Is that the way
he's trying to make the...
Obviously not. So G-Man knows he is lying about that. But as I said, they all do. They don't care.
Well, hang on. He was trying to make the argument.
If it doesn't matter what the facts are, then it doesn't matter what the truth is.
All right. He was trying to make the argument that genies were using stage magic.
Yes.
How have I not seen this? Where has this been? I have missed this. I thought I had the collection, the anthology of G-Man. I think I missed this somewhere along the line. I don't remember this.
Actually, that in the Disney rendering of Aladdin, I think that the genie out of his hat at one point. I think that actually did happen.
Please.
Ergo God exist.
It's amazing to me that we're arguing about Aladdin. You know, like if you strip it down and you look at what the argument is, we're arguing about stage magic and the genies. To me personally, and this is my personal opinion, I don't see a difference between the two, because neither one of them are actual tangible things. They're both designed to trick you and to lead you to think something that's not reality.
So one of G-Man's arguments that God's magic or God's power is not the same thing as magic is that Moses threw his staff down and his staff turned into a snake. That already is magic. That's supernatural. That's a transformation. That's magic. But then the pharaohs threw the pharaoh's mages, magi, magic, threw their staffs down, and their staffs became snakes. But Moses' snake ate their snakes. Which, think about this. If you got two or three snakes, and then one snake comes and eats three other snakes?
Oh, man.
Come on. How stupid can anybody be to really believe this? You can't just be stupid. You have to also be dishonest. Stupidity alone is not enough.
Yes, I think it's more on the dishonesty.
But this was his argument that Moses' snake wasn't magical, because it was exactly the same thing as the magician's magical snakes. It's just that his not magical snake, but by simple definitional fiat, ate the other snakes, which means that it's not magic like the magic snakes. It's the non-magic power snake. What the hell?
They have to see how ridiculous that is. I mean, like, you have to be able to, whether you admit it or not, in your own head and in your heart, you have to know that makes zero sense. I mean,
I have heard believers confess to me that they know that what they believe is not true, but they're going to continue it to believe it anyway. I've seen it in writing. I've seen it many, many times.
Well, isn't it more they say they continue to say they believe it? A lot of times, it's, from what I understand, it's because of societal things with them, family and things of that nature. So they put on this front that they conform and believe these things. And I understand the reasoning behind that.
There's that too, but about something different.
You think they actually believe what they don't? So,
well, they use belief in a different context than we do.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
So when I say magic, I'm obviously not talking about, you know, what Penn and Teller do on stage. That's illusions.
Right. Correct.
Right. And any illusionist will tell you that it's not magic. It's illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I know a number of professional magicians, James Randi, Matt Dillahunty. I know a lot of professional magicians. They will tell you that it's not magic. It's illusion.
Right.
Magic is distinguished from stage magic or illusions because magic is supernatural. It's conjuration. It's everything the Bible describes.
Right.
So that's what makes it magical, is being supernatural. It's not just that it's beyond the natural realm. It's that it's a specific thing that's beyond the natural realm. It's the hexes and curses and blessings. You know what a blessing is? Whenever somebody tells you to have a blessed day, a blessing is literally, really, it's an enchantment. It's a magical enchantment. So when they tell you to have a blessed day, they are literally telling you to have a magically enchanted day.
And when you sneeze.
Yes. So when they tell you that, why don't you respond by saying, well, you should have a magically enchanted day too. They won't understand what the fuck you're talking about.
That's
but
awesome.
If anybody in, later on in that grocery line laughs at what you said, that's an atheist.
Wow, that's great. I'm going to start using that. That's great.
Is that the atheist detector? They laugh at something like that?
You've gotten to, we would actually love to have you back on to talk about more into what we were going into before at another time. I think that would be a really good episode. But I want to kind of shift gears and go into, you've been able to meet a lot of, you know, influential people in the science world and you know, religious world. Who's been like the one person that you just are like, oh, I can't believe I'm actually speaking to this guy right now?
Well, you, of course, Kyle.
Cal.
You.
Well, besides
me. Yeah, besides you and me. But yeah.
I have run into James Randi a number of times.
He's awesome.
I've been to his house a couple of times. And that's the one for me. He was actually the first famous person I ever met. And the beautiful thing about that was that I was kind of already famous on my own to a small degree, at least in this one little circle of people,
sure,
before I met him. So I was at TAM, the amazing meeting, and I saw a mutual friend trying to tell Randi that I was here to see him. So he already knew who I was, but I couldn't get to him, even though he was only 20 feet away. And I could hear the person talking to him, but I couldn't get to him because other people wanted to take pictures with me and sign stuff, you know? And so that was really neat, but I had to do that like three times to get to him.
Yeah.
And so Randi is standing there patiently waiting for me to get to him, and he's just kind of like stroking his beard, looking at
me. Could totally see that. Yeah.
I mean, is there a better way to be introduced to your first famous person you've ever met than to have them see that you're famous?
He would probably be one of the most coolest people to ever hang out with. I mean, the stories that man has.
Randi is really wonderful. He's invited me, as I said, he's invited me to his house a couple of times. I've had dinner with him a few times. I love him.
Yeah. What's, I saw a picture with you and, Professor Dawkins. How was that meeting? To me, that's somebody that I really enjoy listening to. And, I like his bluntness, but in a way that people take it differently than how he means it. Like, for some reason, I think that they try to make him a villain when he's just giving you the raw, unfiltered truth. And
yeah, well, they kind of do the same thing with me. I mean,
they do.
If you do something that's just, if you say something that is just too forward,
right,
these same people will go off about how they hate political correctness. But
right,
when I or Dawkins say something that isn't, you know, flower petaled and perfumed before we say it, then we catch shit for it. Now, Dawkins has always been very pleasant to me when we've met. He's let's at least say that he's been patient with me. I mean, there's been a couple of times that he's smiled, you know, to be, you know, happy to see me or whatever. But, you know, we've never dined together or anything like that. You know, it's not like we're close.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry to say, because I think he and I actually have quite a bit in common in the way that you just described.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we've just never been pals.
Do you let's go to another video of yours that I thought was really interesting, because I didn't think that you would go this route. It was fascinating to watch, but you did a video with a guy who does street epistemology.
I know. I knew before you mentioned that. And you know what? The funny thing is that he was right all along. When you get to the end of that video, you know, Aaron tries street epistemology or whatever, something along those
lines. Was that the one with Anthony Magnabosco?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anthony
Magnabosco. Great guy. Great guy.
A lot of people praise me for my patience, but I'm not even the same league as Magnabosco.
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I really like him a lot. He's been a really nice guy to me.
He and Seth Andrews both have a much better understanding of the human condition than I do, because they can relate to people on a more personal level. Mm-hmm. So that the people that they're talking to don't feel automatic. They're not defensive. You know.
Yeah.
With either Magnabosco or Seth, I mean, people will just open up to them, whereas I am viewed as an immediate enemy.
You're the hammer; they're the scalpel.
There's a value to the approach that I take, mm-hmm. but it's not with the average everyday person on the street. My approach is kind of tailored to the professional liar, the evangelical apologist, the politicians advocating for this, for lawyers, that sort of thing.
Good point.
Yeah, you need a heavy hand there.
You do.
Yeah.
You need a heavy hand in that instance, but
right.
But when we're talking to the average person on the street, that's not for me. That's Seth and Magnabosco, because those guys excel there.
Yeah, I think they're both, I think, equally important, because there's an appeal to different people, and I think covering that. But it was just, for me, it was really fun to watch you be willing to, you know, put yourself out there in a different way. So
yeah, I have to admit my own failure there, because we got to that last guy in the video.
Yeah.
And that guy was clearly looking for a fight.
Yep.
And I was so tired
of
being nice all day.
it was all pent up and had to be released.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
I was still in the wrong for breaking away and not following the SE approach, street epistemology. I should have stayed with it. And had I stayed with it, I actually would have made a stronger inroad than being, you know, frankly, the asshole that I was.
Yeah.
So I learned actually more about that day from editing the video afterward than I did on the spot.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you?
Isn't that funny? Just imagine going through a video where you were proud of everything that you did, and then when you watch the recording of it, you're like, oh.
I do that every time I watch. I have to cut Steve's parts in the videos.
Basically what Kyle wants to do is, like, basically go through, cut all my stuff out, and go, okay, here's the Kyle podcast. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I mean, you're right on the street epistemology, because when I first even heard about it, I was like, what is this? And after talking to Anthony for a while, I binge watched so many of the videos. I was like, this is fascinating. This is a really interesting approach. It needs some work. It needs some work. But
how effective street epistemology is. I went up against professional professor.
After one beer, this is what happens to all of us.
I don't want to string those three words together again. He was also a teacher at a seminary school and described himself as a young earth creationist. And so as soon as I hear that, I jump right into this argument. But he picked up on that I was there. I was there at his seminary with Magna Bosco when once he assumed that there was street epistemology involved. And once he heard the Socratic method, he went off. So it's really damaging to the Christian position, to the religious position in general, to any pseudoscience position, because that's what Christianity is. That's what all religion is. It's pseudoscience. Mm-hmm. So he was, the way that he reacted so strongly and hatefully against street epistemology, I could tell that, you know, this is the thorn in your shoe, isn't it? This is the knife in your back. This is the greatest pain that you experience.
He took it as a threatening thing. I mean, it is threatening to him, sure.
He was real obvious about it.
Yeah, one thing I like about what they do is they take very good constructive criticism. They're trying to improve the methodological approach. And they're constantly trying to improve street epistemology, which means that they really want a working system.
Yep.
So I've been very impressed by it.
It's a level of patience.
Magna Bosco and I are approaching this from a different level. Mm-hmm. He is approaching it from the ground, from the grassroots up, from the individual person.
Sure.
And then using that by spreading out the videos, it becomes a learning experience for other people at that level. And we do need, I think, every approach that we've seen within the atheist movement, although there's people that I disagree with, I mean, they all have a value, they all have a place. And if we're only talking about the facts and promoting not just science, but also secular politics and other such things, there's room for a lot of these different approaches. And they all work, and they all have their application.
Absolutely.
And I'm just admitting my own limits.
Yeah, it's a big umbrella. It's a big umbrella. Yeah.
Yeah. I should be able to do street epistemology better than I do, but that's not what I'm focused on.
But at least you see that. There was a guy that a while back I saw a video of you where you were protesting outside of the I think it was the dinosaurs. The guy kept accusing you of protesting dinosaurs. But apparently he had written a bunch of things about you that were incorrect on a blog. And how do you find the patience to stand there with this guy who is for 45 minutes spouting just shit at you that is?
Wait, what does it mean, protesting dinosaurs? Down with T-Rex? I mean,
I don't know what that is. A guy named Shorman, I think his name was David Shorman. We were in Houston, where the Texas Homeschool Association had chosen Ken Ham as their keynote speaker, which tells you that Texas homeschoolers are all about
religious
extremism and not remotely about education.
So for
every child in Texas that is going through homeschool, if they're associated with the Texas Homeschool Association, then you're questioning, we should question whether they're being educated at all.
Yes.
That's mind-boggling. So
what David Shorman did was he met me. I was standing up with a bunch of other people holding up protest signs and everything. And David Shorman shows up to try to argue nonsense with me. And people are praising me for my patience with him. But I have to admit, and if you watch that video, you'll see it. There was a moment when I touched my nose to his nose and told him that he's a fucking liar.
But even that was like... I was sitting here going, please, Arn, punch him. Please punch him, Arn, please.
But you understand that you can't really praise my patience if I'm doing that.
That is patience. You know what?
I gotta tell you, for Arn, that is restraint. So let's just go with that. We all have our lines in the sand, right?
Steve, this guy was literally in
I don't think I remember
sand.
That.
You're out here protesting dinosaurs, and Arn would say as calmly as he could, that is not the purpose of us being out here today. And he kept doing it. I mean, like, knowing that that's not why they're there, he just kept right in his face going at it. And nose to nose, eye to eye, that is patience compared to what, or at least I would do in that situation. I know.
Well, thank you for that. I didn't consider it to be very patient. And there are a number of others that every time I have an episode like that, and people say, well, you know, that's you need to correct that. And so, yeah, I'm working on it.
You know what? Different strokes, different folks. And I think there's a different approaches. Like I said before, you're the hammer. People like Anthony Magna Bosco and Seth, they're the scalpel. One approach I don't think is necessarily better than the other. I think it's situational, and it takes everybody.
Well, it does. I want to just let people know that the diversity of that, too, because, I mean, Seth has a completely different approach as I do, and Matt Dillahunty also. You know, he has extreme familiarity with Scripture. and with a Christian interpretation of Scripture, which is where he really excels against me. I can tell you what the Bible says, but I can't tell you what the Bible means in the mind of a Christian, because they're not the same thing.
Good point.
Yeah, and so this is the disadvantage that I have in taking on Islam, because reading the Quran, I will only know that what an outsider understands from reading the Quran, from what it says. But a number of Quranic specialists that I know have told me, no, you have to also read the Hadiths, because you have to know what the Muslim interpretation of the scriptures is. Because in none of these cases does it matter what it actually says. It's only what they interpret it to say.
That makes sense. Are you thinking about adding Islam to your list?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How do you have time for that? When do you sleep? Seriously.
Yeah, that's kind of an embarrassing thing. Twice a week, I think.
I believe it.
I'm a little exaggerating, but I will generally miss 2 days of sleep entirely in a given week, where I just stay up all the time. It's once I have a project, once I've gotten started on something, I've got a script that I need to do, and I've got it written, and it's time to record it, I'm going to sit there and slave away at trying to render that video until I can't stay awake anymore.
And is the trade off, the time that you're putting in, and the stress and the constant confrontations, people coming after you, is all that in the end worth it to you? Like, do you look back and reflect and say, yes, I would make this decision again to come, because it's got to take a stressful kind of toll on your mind. And
I know other people who haven't been as successful in their activism as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of one person in particular who I've known for, I think, 4 years, and his channel has never gone much of anywhere, but that doesn't, that doesn't impede his enthusiasm at all. I mean, he's because really this, we have a motivation, which is core, which is, like I said, it's not promoting a belief system like the religions keep wanting to argue that it is. It really is about, fairness to other people. If you're into secular politics, and this really is about, and also if you're into humanism, which is another aspect of this. But if you're just interested in truth, then you're going to be sort of defending the scientific position over the creationist position. So, I mean, my area of expertise in this is pretty explicit. I mean, it's pretty easily drawn out. We mm-hmm. have liars versus people who hopefully shouldn't be lying. Yeah.
Before we let you go, Arn,
I'm sorry, I didn't answer the rest of this. While this other person didn't, he didn't experience any. I mean, he's still just as enthusiastic years later, even though his channel didn't take off the way mine did. I was lucky that I did reap some benefit of in that I do. People express appreciation for what I'm doing, and that's wonderful.
Yeah,
and I want to say that keeps me going. But I honestly, if my channel had not taken off like this other guy's channel didn't, I'd still be where he is. I'd still be just as enthusiastic. I'd still be doing this, but I'd be doing this while working for somebody else at the same time.
So you're basically saying size doesn't matter, your size of your channel.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm not the kind of guy that would ever argue that.
Okay, fair enough. No, would I. No. Do you hear? Size does matter, people.
Arn, we appreciate you taking the time out to join us and answer some questions. One question that I have before you we let you go. What was the best debate, you think, in terms of a creationist, a Christian, or somebody on the opposite side gave you pause to think? Like, has there been somebody that you've gone up against that had a point where when you left the podium, you're kind of like, well, I gotta figure that out. That was a good question.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to answer it a little differently than you expect.
Sure.
In 1998, I made a point about using organs from apes because they closer fit humans than other species. And then I was, and then I discovered that people actually use organs from pigs more often than they do apes, because very rarely do you get a chimpanzee heart that's capable of, you know, for the obese person, obese human is not enough. So they usually use pig hearts. And that the compatibility genetically isn't remotely a factor in that case, that it's a purely mechanical. You know, so, and that once you get outside of an optimal human range, then you, your capacity for rejection of an organ is the same regardless what species it is. So the genetics don't mean anything in that case. It really is just mechanical. Can the volume of this mammalian heart withstand the size of your girth, so to speak? But it was a point that I lost I was on Usenet back at that time. And it was just the first time that it was actually the only time that a creationist ever made a point that I had to concede was wrong. That, honestly, 1998.
Yeah, and I think the point there about a point too.
That one and only occurrence.
Well, at least you change your position on it, because that's, I mean, he makes a valid point on that, and so
yeah. No, I lost. You know. More importantly, shortly thereafter, I lost a heated argument with another, let's say, evolutionist. I was arguing with a systematist who was one of these. I think he was an Asperger sort of a person, you know, one of those Sheldon types from Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy was such an ass.
But brilliant, right?
But the thing is, he had like, if he had been polite about it, it would have been so much easier to change my mind, but he was just a complete abrupt dick. But yet, I had to concede, and it took me months to understand this, that he was right and I was wrong. And it was such a moment for me. I argued that I had always been taught that apes were not monkeys, that monkeys and apes were separate things. And I'd been taught that all my life, and I can still show documentation that, you know, professional scientists still hold this position, many of them, that apes and monkeys are distinctly separate groups, and that monkeys, or that apes did not come from monkeys. But this professional systematist, which means he's Cladus, which means he's doing phylogenies, which is what I'm doing now, he showed me, no, that's not right, that apes actually are a subset of monkeys, and that by extension and by definition and derivation, so are humans, that we didn't just come from monkeys, that we are still currently, right now, monkeys. We are monkeys right now.
Is it the tail that makes the, like, what is it that
No,
apes don't have tails.
that's what I thought once upon a time too, except that the Barbary ape, for example, doesn't have a tail, and neither do those mute, adorable Japanese macaques that hang out in hot tubs. Have you ever seen these things? They're beautiful.
Yes.
The Japanese macaques have these, like, orange faces, and they all look very Buddhist.
yeah, of course, yes.
You know, they're always looking so very tranquil because they live in volcanic hot springs. They live in a frozen mountain, but obviously, in order to avoid the cold, they hang out in volcanic hot springs. How adorable is that?
That's badass.
That'd be a pretty cool way to live your life. Hey, what you doing today? I'm going to hang out in a volcanic hot spring. Awesome.
Yeah, they're very enviable monkeys.
Yeah, no kidding.
How do you have an issue saying that we evolved from that? I mean, I would happily say we evolved.
These don't have they're macaques. Some of the macaques don't have tails. So the general description between the old world monkeys and the new world monkeys is that the old world monkeys actually have diminished tails or useless tails, whereas the new world monkeys are actually, even though they're called new world, they're actually older in their morphology than the new world monkeys or than the old world monkeys are. So they have strong tails, they have long tails, they have prehensile tails, but old world monkeys don't.
Yeah, we're old world monkeys, right?
Their tails are weak or diminished or absent altogether.
See, I was always taught that humans are old world monkeys. That's how I learned it. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So humans are old world monkeys. But anyway, I got into the argument with this guy, and he's a professional scientist. But he's a dick.
So therefore, his argument is automatically wrong. No, I'm kidding.
He's being blunt and curt and rude about it. But the thing is I had to realize, and I'm embarrassed that it took me so long to realize it. Fuck, he was right.
But he's and a dick. So,
but he's still a dick, right?
So I made a video. I made it because it wasn't enough to just to come eating humble pie and admit in some Usenet post that, yeah, you're right. I had to do something more than that because it was I was significantly wrong.
Oh, I bet that was tough, wasn't it?
Humble pie so video.
I made a video that said, turns out we did come from monkeys. And I encourage everybody to see that. The version that you'll see is a re-upload because the Christians got upset because I showed one of the scenes as a baby suckling on a breast. Now, you can't see nipple or anything. Not that it would matter if you could. It's a fucking baby suckling on a breast. I mean, I was describing what makes us mammals.
Yeah.
Right?
Grow up.
Mammary glands. I showed the most adorable scene of this beautiful cherubic child suckling on, you know, breastfeeding. And I thought it was, this is so cute. This is adorable. No, Christians got upset because they think that's pornographic.
They have no idea what's on YouTube, Ben.
People who say they worship family values.
Yeah, that's nonsensical.
And they get upset over that shit. So I replaced it with a baby sucking on a bottle of Jack Daniels.
That's how I was raised.
And somehow the Christians didn't complain about that one.
Well, because we all like Jack Daniels. Yeah, Jack Daniels is great. But I've had people tell me we're not mammals. I'm like, how do you figure that one out? Once you start down that path, it's like, we're not mammals.
I made this video.
Okay.
I made this video in making this admission, and then I sent the link to the guy just to let him know that I didn't just admit it to him. I admitted to everybody, you're right, I'm wrong, and you're a dick, but it doesn't matter, but you're right.
What did he say back?
No shit. That's what he said. He's like, no shit, Aaron. Told you. Yeah.
It was a very short response. I think he appreciated the admission, because how can you not? I mean, I did. I, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
I fucked up. Sorry.
But, you know, and a good point on that, too, is I've seen plenty of atheist videos do that very same thing. They'll come out and they'll either admit or acknowledge that the other person had a point or that they themselves were particularly wrong. You will never see that, or hardly ever see that, on the other side.
Because they think it's a weakness if they do.
Yeah, Carl Sagan made a comment like that, and it's one of my favorite quotes from him. He was speaking at an event, I don't remember where, so it wasn't part of the Cosmos series. It was part of his presentation there where he was a keynote speaker at some event, and he said that very often you will see, or it has happened, that you will have a scientist who holds this position, and you can show the scientist that the position is wrong, and the scientist will make that admission. They'll say, well, you're right, my point is mistaken, and they will change their position and never argue that same position again. And he says it doesn't happen very often because, you know, these things can be painful if you're emotionally attached to an idea, but it does happen, and it happens every day. And Sagan said, I can't remember the last time that's happened in religion or in politics.
I had it happen to be with one of your friends, Hogtie, that we were embroiled in something with physics and doing with sublimation and things of that nature, and I was wrong. And I, for several days after arguing about the physics, when Hogtie...
Not you, Steve.
I know, but you know, the data was there. I'm like, shit. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? He's right. I mean, I, at that point, there was nowhere else I could go. I mean, he had demonstrated that I was completely wrong. So
I think people
shit happens, right?
To people who are able to admit that, you know, they do make mistakes and that, you know, shit like that happens. Or at least for me, anyway, I would be very wary of somebody who thinks that they have all the right answers all the right time and they're never wrong.
I know someone in the atheist movement who I will not utter his name, but who stated that he's never been wrong about anything.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
You have to say who it is now.
Not
good. That would be my partner Kyle here. He has never been wrong ever throughout his entire history of life. No, kidding.
I'm not going to say who it is.
But I never said
that. Y'all have heard his name. He's more.
Well, you know what? I've never been wrong either. I've been mistaken. But, no,
Aaron comes on here and drops these little teasing nuggets, and it's just going to back out.
I'm just going to leave you with that. You're just going to have to figure it out yourself.
I'm going to go through a process of elimination. They're going to keep me up for days now. Process of elimination here. Who's he talking about?
Aaron, this was fantastic. It was great. I know that you're busy and you gave us your time and you didn't have to do that. We appreciate everything that you're doing. Obviously, keep rocking and rolling. And I'd like to have you back on to go further into some of the topics that we got into the beginning of the conversation. I actually had a list of questions written down that we got to two of them. So, which is, I mean, it's a good problem to have. So, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you, Aaron.
No, my pleasure. Thank you much. Right.
And a special thanks to you, the listener, for taking time out of your day to join us here on this special episode of Non Sequitur. Join us on our regular schedule next Saturday at noon for an all-new episode. As always, I'm Kyle Curtis. That was Steve McRae. And this is Non Sequitur, reminding you to be bold, dream on, and never hide. Until next time.